Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
What is going on, everyone? Thank you for tuning in to episode 55 of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. I am your co-host, Logan Lewis, and I'm flying solo again today. Brandon actually left a couple days ago, heading to Greece, so hopefully has a good time on that trip. And actually, by the time this episode releases, I'll be up in the Northwest Territories guiding again for probably be up there about a week by the time this episode goes up. So I just wanted to hop on here quick. Nothing too much for the intro, as it is just myself, but we have part two of the episodes here with TJ Erickson. This one is heavily dives into live scope and kind of going right from the bare minimum basics of it to more detailed information about it. So I think lots of the walleye people are going to find this one very interesting to listen to. I know live scope is, people are figuring it out for sure, but it's still fairly new in the whole scene. So I know there's lots of questions surrounding it. If you on the groups and Facebook and on YouTube and stuff, there's lots of good information. So hopefully this episode kind of teaches you some things about the live scope. But if not, like I said, some Facebook groups are very helpful and YouTube as well. But I guess for that, speaking of the live scope, I've been out fishing quite a bit lately, actually the last couple weekends, and we have the LVS 34, and that has been huge for us with some of these spring walleye. Even me and my buddy were out on Buffalo Pound there a couple days ago, and we've just kind of having trouble finding some walleye. The bite had been insane there for a little bit, and ended up with the live scope finding some walleye. I think they're in about 3 to 5 feet of water. Normally I wouldn't be looking there really, especially because the water changed by about 8 degrees in like 3 days. So I thought that would really throw them off and maybe push them a little bit deeper, but nope, found them in 3 to 4 feet. Had a great afternoon there after a very slow morning on Last Mountain there. And I'm actually recording this intro, I think it's the weekend before the Regina Beach Walleye Classic. So that should be interesting to see how that tournament goes. I was out there a couple days before the tournament took place. Things were pretty slow, but also it was like plus 30 that day, not a breath of wind. It was a beautiful day out there, but the fishing was slow. Saw lots of guys pre-fishing, and same thing. It sounds like it was slow across the board. So hopefully things turn on. Tournament's always a lot more fun to obviously fish in, but also kind of tune in on Facebook and see how it's going when you got some big weights in there. So good luck to everyone that was fishing that as well. But before we hop into this episode, I want to make sure to mention our sponsors. So big thank you to 13 Fishing for coming on again this year as our presenting sponsor. Like I've mentioned in past episodes, I've got quite a bit of their stuff coming up with me to the territories here. Really excited to try out the new telescopic Owen Muskie rods that they have. I got two of those coming up, I think in the 9 foot range there. So it's nice. They break down to about 7 feet. So that works perfectly for bringing them on the plane, as that's as long as my rod tube goes. But yeah, be sure to check them out. Head over to the website, save 15% off with our code WeekendWarriors. And yeah, get stocked up here. Spring's in full swing here, getting closer to summer and whatnot. So definitely a good time to stock up on stuff. Second up here, Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. Thank you again for coming on. I know the Buffalo Pound tournament is going to be going on while I'm gone. So kind of sucks to be missing that one, but I guess you can't have your cake and eat it too, right? So that will be one that I think should be pretty interesting to see how it goes as well. With that one, I believe you need your Moose Jaw Wildlife Federation membership with that one, as it's put on by that branch. But like I said, not expensive. It's a great membership to have and a great cause as well. So be sure to check them out. And if anyone's finding any of those big, long spring walleye, be sure to enter those in the Master Angler program as well. And then we'll have a quick word here from our other sponsor, Lucky Bastard Distillers. You can save, I believe it's 10% off with our code in the show notes below. They ship Canada wide. So be sure to check them out. We'll have a quick word from them, and then we'll hop into part two with TJ Erickson.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the dill, my friends, is not a myth.
Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard?
It's the one with the pickle in it.
We may as well get into the probably the one of the most important topics in the fishing scene right now, especially as far as electronics go. We've got LiveScope, and like you said, you're really into the tech, the electronics, and everything like that. So me and Brandon have used the LiveScope a little bit. Like I said, we picked ours up at the Winnipeg Ice Show last year. We have the LVS34. We got the winter package there, but you've spent a ton of time with this. I just rigged mine up for my boat in a very, we'll say, redneck way, I guess, but it saved me quite a bit of money. It's about 10% of the cost of what I was looking at. So I guess you'd be someone great to kind of dive into LiveScope. And I think we kind of maybe want to start off as if it's like you're talking to maybe a beginner, and then get into some of that more intermediate stuff and people like what they can actually use if they're on the boat. Because there's people that listen that maybe they're shore fishing or whatever, they don't fish as much and maybe haven't even heard of LiveScope. So kind of what is the difference, I guess, between LiveScope and traditional sonars that people have been using for however many years?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, every piece of technology, it has its place. You know, your 2D sonar, your traditional sonar, like that has its place for sure. Your side imaging, you know, that's obviously a game changer. You have your mega, like your 360 imaging from Humminbird, like that one. You have live imaging. There's all these different things, and they all have kind of their own unique, you know, benefit. Mm-hmm. And live imaging, LiveScope is the one that I use, has been honestly a big time game changer. They all have in their own way, but you know, LiveScope especially has really, I don't know, paved the way for a lot of the ways that I fish, and I think a lot of the ways that the fishing industry in general is going.
Yeah.
You know, but you have your 2D sonar, which shoots the cone directly underneath, and you're seeing what's right underneath your boat. And depending on your degree of the cone angle, you know, it's seeing wider or narrower depending on your cone. But you're seeing a pretty small snippet of what's below, you know. And then side imaging came out, and you know, I run the mega side imaging, and it is incredible the detail that you can pick up at times. You're seeing like little cricks in the rocks, and you know, whatever it is, you can see fins on fish. I was out sturgeon fishing this spring, and like you can just see the perfect outline of a sturgeon on this, but that's shooting beams off to the side. So a lot of times what you're seeing with the side imaging is you're seeing it, you know, 70 feet to one side of your boat, or 70 feet to the other, 30 feet, and you're either seeing the reflection of the beam back on as like a hard return, or you're seeing that shadow. And you know, depending on whether you're on soft bottom or hard bottom, I look for different things. You know, on a hard bottom, I'm looking for more of the shadow. On a soft bottom, I'm looking for more of that hard return of the fish itself.
It's like that grain of rice things. Is what they say,
yeah,
right?
Your grain of rice. Yeah, so like if I'm fishing hard bottom and it's super bright on my screen, you know, I'm looking for shadow. Sometimes you won't even see the fish because it's such a hard return. It's all a hard return. And you know, but then you're seeing that shadow. Soft bottom, you're not seeing a shadow because it's all pretty dark. Mm-hmm. But you have that big, like you said, grain of rice. Or depending on how shallow you're fishing, sometimes you can actually see a little bit of the outline of the fish.
Yeah.
But you know, that's your side imaging, where it's one side, both sides of the boat, and you can shoot. But that's still like in the past, essentially.
Right.
You know, your 2D is in the past. That is, it's not showing it real time. A lot of times, it's, you know, really close because you can see it as they're sitting over there. But again, with side imaging, you, to get your best picture, you have to be moving.
Yeah.
You know, your boat has to be going. It's so that's kind of your 2D and your side imaging. You know, mega 3 or like your 360 imaging, that's similar to side imaging, but it just continues to rotate through,
right,
and give you that circle of what it's looking like, and you kind of see 360 degrees around you, but it's not in real time. Where, you know, now you have your live imaging, and that essentially shoots a cone angle, so it shoots it down, and it's 135 degrees. So you're kind of looking at it like this,
right?
I don't know if my
that's in your forward mode,
correct? Yeah, so in forward mode, and so it's 135 degrees, so it's either like this in forward mode, or this is parallel to the top of the water, and you're seeing a little bit back,
right?
Or if you go into down mode, you know, then you're looking at it a little more like this. It's more of kind of like a triangle, but it's still
that same angle.
I believe it's like, I think it's like 135 degrees. I have a video on it, so I should have it off the top of my head, but it's, you know, so depending on which angle you're looking at, and then when you're looking at your perspective mode, then you take this right here, and you turn it on its side. So you're seeing it kind of like from the top down. It's really hard to explain without visuals.
Right.
And that's actually been one of my most watched videos, is like explaining, you know, all the different angles. Because people see LiveScope and they're like, what does that even mean? Like, what am I seeing?
Yeah.
You know, my clients a lot of times are the same thing. Like, what am I looking at right here? But essentially, so it's got a downward angle where it's kind of going down in a beam like this, but it's got three dimensional, where now it's also shooting out that way. So you can actually shoot it out in any direction, and it's going to be going at an angle like that a little bit. You know, like I said, without visuals, it's a little hard to explain just with my hands, even though I talk with my hands a lot. Yeah. My wife is always like, your hands are going like crazy all the time when you're talking. I was like, I know, I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with live imaging, you can, especially I switched to the LVS-34. I know that's what you said you guys have.
Yeah.
I was running the LVS-32 for a long time. And when the LVS-34 came out, I was like, you know, it's not going to be that much of an improvement where I'm going to need to switch. And then I went out with a buddy of mine, and he had the LVS-34, and we were out. And, you know, with my LVS-32, I was seeing about 90 feet. Right around 90, it was starting to get pretty fuzzy and got kind of grainy. And we got out in his boat, and I casted, like, I don't know, an eighth-ounce jig at 70 or 90 feet. And I was seeing this jig just fall perfectly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I didn't think it was, but this thing – so now I'm scanning at, like, 140 feet,
right?
You know. But with your live imaging, you know, you can face it any direction. You can actually direct it, and it's showing what's happening real time.
Right.
So I can be scanning. I can move my transducer, so I can turn it whichever way it's facing, you know, and that's where you're looking. And a lot of times you have your handle, so you can tell which way you're facing. And so I can be scanning around, and all of a sudden, okay, I'm going off to a hump off to my right side. I'm driving right next to it. I can look out ahead even of me if I'm driving towards a hump and it's facing directly ahead of me.
Yeah.
And then I can see what these fish are doing in real time, you know? So you're seeing that, and you can see where the fish are. You can see what they're doing in live time where you're casting, and you can literally watch your jig, you know, drop. So the live imaging is huge for a variety of purposes. You know, there's sometimes where, okay, if you're going to burn some crawlers over the tops of weeds, like, is LiveScope going to be a huge help? Maybe not really.
Right.
But for my style of fishing, and for 90% of what I do, I mean, I'd feel like I would fish in blind without it, you know? So you're able to point in any direction around the boat and see out, like I said, up to 140 feet. Again, it's a smaller sliver of the water.
Right.
You know, but you can still see where these fish are. You can see pods of fish. You can see them. You can pick them up a lot more than maybe side imaging, especially on rocks.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I found, my side imaging. You know, there's some guys that say they can pick out fish on rocks pretty easily. And I don't know, I'd have a tough time believing that, because I've looked at, I don't know how many hours of, I was looking at that the other day on my Humminbird. I had like thousands of hours on that thing already.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've looked at it a lot, and there's some times where I'll say I'm pretty confident that I saw a fish on there. But now with your LiveScope, you can just scan over that. A lot of times what I do, I get to a hump or a whatever, and I scan over top of it. I just drive. And I turn it around. Okay, if there's not fish on there, I keep moving.
Yeah.
Or all of a sudden I'm scanning around and I see boop, boop, a couple little blips on it. Okay, now I just covered, say, a 100-foot wide hump in 20 seconds, whatever
right.
it is, took me to scan it. And then you're able to see that instead of driving over the fish and spooking them. So, yeah, it's a really cool tool. Again, just like anything, you pay for it. But live imaging has truly, you know, changed the way that I fish and changed the way that a lot of people have fished. And, you know, you look at a lot of these walleye tours, and I mean, a lot of them are won right now with the live imaging. It's really,
oh yeah, for sure.
It's really kind of taken over. And I don't know if you want, you know, I can talk some of the benefits of it, some of the things that I've found, if you want to get into that. I don't know anything specific that you want to kind of dive into with the LiveScope.
I think one thing, like you're saying, it's hard to describe unless you've seen it. I think I hadn't heard it before, but I was kind of explaining it to my buddy this weekend. If you want to think of 2D and side imaging, especially 2D, as more of like a heartbeat monitor that you see in like the hospital shows or whatever, right? And it shows you can see a history for a bit of what was happening, and it is showing you real time what's happening right there, right? But it's not live, for lack of a better term, right? And 2D, side imaging, if you want to think of it, kind of the same, maybe more of as an X-ray, whereas I think of LiveScope as an ultrasound, right? Like it's, if you want to think about it, because I'm sure more people have seen those, right? Is between the X-ray and the ultrasound. I think of it that way. It's more that live video. You move it around, you can see everything in real time. And my biggest thing is the movement of it, right? Like, yeah, 2D, you can see if you're vertical jigging on something, you can see it come up and follow your jig and stuff. But as far as like watching the fish turn and like, it's just so much more detail is the biggest thing, right? So if people want to kind of imagine that in their head, it's like a fish ultrasound, I guess, kind of thing.
Yeah, right there. And from everything that I've heard to, it's actually very similar technology.
Okay.
You know, you have your individual beams that are all stitched together, which is what LiveScope is.
Right.
You know, you have your three different transducers that all stitch together to create kind of like your image. So yeah, that's a great example right there, because it's honestly very similar technology from everything that I've heard.
Right. And that makes sense. And that's one thing I've already learned stuff just from the 10 minutes we've been talking about this, but as far as the angle, I guess, of your beam, not the 130, you say 130 or 135?
135. Yeah. It's like three, 45 degree angles,
right,
that are stitched together.
Okay. So, yep. So not that one as much, but when you talked about what's shooting forward and what you're actually seeing is maybe skinnier, but the fact that you can just take your handle and turn it and scan an area that quick in real time, it kind of makes up for it. Whereas you think of side imaging, I can see 100 feet out, whatever, right? Like, that's a little bit different there. And I kind of thought that, I was like, how small is this beam? Like, am I like dead on right there? Or is this like, or am I, do I have a little bit of leeway here? But it actually, I thought that was, when I was first using it, I thought of that as kind of a disadvantage. But now I'm like, that's a huge advantage, because I know it's right there. It's not like say you're ice fishing or something over, maybe you're ice fishing for Lakers. That fish with your cone angle could be quite a ways away, but it looks like it's showing up on your flasher or whatever, right? If you're the way you're running it. So it's kind of nice that you can actually pinpoint exactly where those fish are with the live scope, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, don't quote me on this, and I should know this off the top of my head because I have a video on it, but I want to say it's like a 15 degree cone angle maybe. Mm-hmm. But I could be wrong on that. So yeah, depending on how deep you are, obviously it's showing more or less,
right?
Depending on how close you are to the top of the water or whatever. But yeah, it's enough information where you can really see what's going on, but not like, okay, I could cast 30 feet that way or 30 feet that way,
and right,
that might be where that fish is. You know, like, you can really dial in kind of where those casts are. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've realized is some of those sometimes you have to be so accurate and so precise with your casts, you know, especially with walleyes, if they're being kind of finicky or doing walleye things and not biting or whatever, you know, you gotta sometimes just put that bait in front of their face for as long as possible. And that's a lot of times, you know, especially as it gets to midsummer, I talk to my clients about that a lot. Like, we're going to see a lot of fish on the live scope today. Like, we're going to go bounce around from group to group to group, because the amount of time I spend in the water, I'm going to know out of 30 spots, they're going to be in 20 of them, you know? So we're going to go, and we're going to go from spot to spot. There's gonna be some times where we're going to go out and we're going to cast, and you're going to watch your bait drop in the middle of the school, and they're not even going to pay any attention to it.
Right.
And then there's going to be times where you drop in, and that first drop, there's one that just crushes it, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that with LiveScope specifically that I really kind of keyed in on is being able to take that information, but sometimes it's not always walleyes, you know, sometimes,
they're for suckers, sure.
Sometimes they're whatever it is. So being able to have like an AquaView paired with it, I mean, I have my AquaView in my boat all the time, you know? And so it's kind of funny, you know, on guide trips of people are always a little bit skeptical. If they haven't seen LiveScope, they don't really know what it's about. And I'm like, oh yeah, you see all those fish. And they're like, oh yeah, nice guide trick. Like, oh yeah, those are all fish sitting over there.
They're
like,
in demo
yeah,
mode.
I'm sure. Right. Exactly. So we're casting them. They're not biting. Like, oh yeah, those are fish. They're not biting. And then I'll say like, do you guys want to drop the camera down and see if we can see them? They might spook. And they're like, oh yeah, that's actually, so we'll drive over and we'll drop the camera down. Just like, just littered with walleyes. And they're like, wait, you weren't lying. I was like, no, like, so then they get bought in, you know, and they're like, oh my gosh, there's 40 walleye sitting right there, you know, and they get, it's pretty cool to see it. Just like, it makes you fish with a purpose,
right?
You know, like you should be anyways, you know, but it's pretty easy to, okay, a fish I've been biting for a while, it's pretty easy to fish lazy.
Yeah, well, for
but
sure.
When you know that like every cast is going to be in front of a fish, I mean, that's makes you fish a little different, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's really cool. You know, I talked to you a little bit about, you know, John Thielen in the last episode here. We were talking, like, John Thielen was talking about the bait shortage. And one of the things he talked about is like, we need to do something about bait because that has to get, we have to get people into fishing, you know, it's getting harder and harder to get into fishing. So if people go out and they use bait and they don't catch fish, or they can't get minnows and then they don't get catch fish, if they do that 2-3 times, they're going to be done fishing.
Yeah.
So we got to keep finding ways to get people into fishing. And that's one of the things that I've seen, especially with the younger generation. They know electronics so well already that they pick up on this stuff way quicker. So if I'm going out with like a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old and parents, honestly, the 6-year-old and 8-year-old oftentimes are like picking up on live scope earlier. You know, then there's the whole question of like, okay, well now they're staring at another screen and it's like, okay, you know, there's both positive and negative as far as that goes. But being able to get them interested in fishing, they get so engaged. And they, a lot of these parents come back to me like, I have never seen my kids so interested in fishing. Mm-hmm. Like whether they were catching fish or not, like knowing that their bait was, they could see the bait going down the fish and like they know their fish there.
Yeah.
Like you just fish differently a lot of times.
And for sure.
You said you fish with a purpose for sure.
Yeah. No, and that's, I think it, I was thinking about it the other time and I was like, I wonder how many kids are going to get into fishing. And it's not even, well, not, I guess, for fishing, but it's like, it's not even the act of fishing. It's like, this is like a game for them. It's go out there, it's locate the fish, and it's catch the fish using this technology. It's not even as much just what lots of us are doing right now. It's the love of the fishing and getting out there and catching the fish. It's like, it's just manipulating this electronic to figure out where these things are and basically succeed. Because it's really, if you view it that way, it's no different than a video game. It's just literally the most real life version you'll ever get of one, right? Like it's, people always talk about flashers and I don't know, fishing Lakers or even fishing Cisco. It's kind of like a video game because you're watching them on your flashers just up and down like crazy, right? But I could see that being a thing in the future a bit is kids, is they're just, like you said, so dialed into electronics that it's almost like it's that specifically is happening to achieve that goal. Whereas I feel like ours is kind of, that's just part of us having fun with our fishing or like you with your guiding, right? I could see it being totally different and I could be totally wrong, but I just is like, this feels like a video game sometimes with a live scope.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, it's kind of one of the things I struggle with at times, and the fact of like, is it taking something away from the experience, you know? And John Thielen and his little thing that he was talking about with the bait shortage, he was just saying like, with social media, with YouTube, with all this stuff, people don't go out for the experience anymore because it's not something that they can post on social media or whatever. It's like they not going out for their, with their grandpa and just catching zero fish, but still having the time of their life, you know? And
it is
one of those things that's kind of a challenge. Like, okay, how much of that is like, hey, times are changing, like fishing's changing. It's a really cool opportunity. And it's, you know, a way to break down lakes much quicker. And, you know, I just think about, for me, is like moving to the Park Rapids area. And I talked last episode about like how different it is than fishing Lake of the Woods. So my learning curve with the live scope was like skyrocketed because of it, because I can learn out what these fish are doing and where they're at. And so there's that, where you can like break down this lake so much easier. But then, you know, I can also see some of the other side of things where it's like, okay, these kids are looking at screens 90% of the day. Now the one time they can actually be out in nature, they're looking at another screen.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, that's valid, you know? And, you know, kind of seeing through some of that. And I know there's a lot of live scope haters out there.
Yeah.
You know, I see it in my YouTube video comments. I see it in Instagram. I see it, you know, people love, but no matter what you're doing, there's always going to be haters, but there's a lot of people that don't like the live scope. It's cheating or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, to each his own. If that's not something you're interested in, that's fine with me. But like, this is something that I have found to be so beneficial. And, you know, bottom line is it relies on us anglers. I know the musky guys, you know, there's a lot of debate on the whole live imaging thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some people love it. Some people are like, no, it's killing this fishery or whatever it is. And honestly, the bottom line is the electronics or the technology is there. It's just depends so much on us as the anglers to be able to steward. I mean, what a cool opportunity we have to have all these fisheries and all this money and time put into us being able to catch some of these fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now it's okay. Just because you can see them down in 50 feet talking like walleyes or even, you know, muskies for that matter, you know, just because you can see a muskie, just because they're down there, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to fish for them because maybe, you know, there's a possibility of barotrauma or something like that, you know? So there's a lot of that relies on us. And I know we talked last episode a little bit. One of the things that I've loved about, as much negative as there is on the social media, on YouTube, I feel like there's been so much education,
yeah,
you know, on a lot of these different YouTube channels, or, you know, I try to promote as well as like you talk catch and release, you know, catch your limit or limit your catch. I know you, you mentioned that a few times in episodes. And I mean, it's really cool to see kind of a change in some of that. As much negatives as there are with that, it's like, man, people are really becoming educated because people are being like, hey, you can go out and catch and release. Like, you don't have to keep everything.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people assume like, okay, you're going to catch way more fish and it's going to kill our fisheries. Well, is that accurate? Because a lot of times people that have LiveScope that invest the money, they are the people that are catching and releasing. Yeah. They're the ones that are practicing selective harvest. And so bottom line, it just comes down to the anglers. I know there's a lot of negatives that can be associated with LiveScope.
For sure.
And people are gonna hate no matter what.
Yeah.
But being able to steward the resources that we have and being able to use them efficiently while maintaining these fisheries. And truthfully, it's one of those things where I love LiveScope and it's a game changer. But if it's getting to the point where it's hurting our fisheries, would I, you know, support legislation? Like, if that's truly hurting our fisheries, which I don't think it will, if we can continue to educate. And bottom line is, I mean, the fish are changing. You know, you can't go out. Like, I a lot of the clients that I have, they maybe live on a lake. And they're, oh, we fished this lake for 30 years. We used to go out and catch walleyes like crazy. And now these last 10 years, we can't catch a walleye. I mean, fish are changing, whether it's lakes getting clear with invasive species or whether it's fish getting educated because they're seeing more baits. They're seeing more, you know, pressure. They're getting, so that's part of it too. It's like some a part of it. There's the electronics can be helpful to keep people into fishing.
Oh,
otherwise
yeah.
It can be pretty tough at times. So
there's
good and bad to both of it. I'm huge time. Big LiveScope proponent, live imaging proponent, because it's super cool and some of the things that can offer, but you know, there's some negatives to it as well.
Yeah. And it's definitely one of those things. It's pretty cliche, but with that power comes even more responsibility. And that's where teaching people comes in. That's where the teaching you can do as a guide for your clients. And yeah, this is all great and everything. Like, we talk about it with, when we had some of our burbot episodes where we talk about how to target burbot. Prefaced it with the same thing. Once you do find them, they're not difficult to catch most of the time, right? Once you find those burb, it's not difficult. So this information that you're using that we're talking about to go and find them and locate them, you, like, our limit's 8 per person daily. I think that's also the possession limit, but still, it's pretty crazy with those fish because their spawning is different and everything too is with them. This is a side note, obviously, it's the LiveScope, but it's like with that knowledge that you have, there's also a responsibility to be ethical about it. And just because you've located the burbot doesn't mean you should be keeping 8 every time that you go out there, because pretty soon you're gonna have to find a new spot to go look for those burbot, right? And it's like same thing with the LiveScope. Yeah, okay, you're able to locate the fish now, and just because you've located the fish doesn't always mean they're gonna bite, like we talked about in the first episode. But it's it's a lot better chance of catching a fish than if you don't know where they are, right? So it's like, with that, you got to be mindful of what you're doing. Like, if there is some people that they go out and say for here in Saskatchewan, they go out to catch their 4 walleye and they go back in, right? Maybe they're only out for half an hour. To me, I'd be like, I made it all the way out here. Why am I leaving right away? But it's the responsibility thing. So that's where a lot more education through things like this, people's YouTube channels, right? Like, that's where the education is important too. If you're going to be talking about this new technology and teaching people how to find these fish, then it's good to also teach them how to respect the resource as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, all the time. And like, if I'm catching fish and throwing them back, you know, people are commenting in the comment section like, why'd you throw that fish back? Like, that's a perfect eater. Just like, I have a pack of fish in my freezer. I don't need it. Like, if I want to have a fresh meal, you know, maybe I'll keep a couple fish for me and my wife and we'll be good. But yeah, it's I do see a lot of cultural shift in that, which I think is really cool. These younger generations, you know, maybe they're not as many getting into fishing or hunting or whatever it is, but I do think we're starting to see a lot more of that conservation side of things, which is really cool and is a huge, you know, tribute to a lot of the people that make content, because that's where a lot of that education is coming from, you know, whether it be on YouTube or television shows or whatever it is. And that's a pretty cool trend that I'm seeing. And even some of the students that I have or some of the athletes that I coach or whatever it is, you know, being able to see that kind of being passed down now as opposed to, what is it? I mean, old habits die hard. It's hard, man, when people are used to, even growing up, like when we were on Lake of the Woods, we'd catch so many walleyes all the time. And it's like, okay, we're going to catch our limit and then we're just going to do whatever, you know? And so we always would, if we had a chance to catch our limit, we were catching our limit. And now I'm looking back on it, it's like, okay, how many packs of fish in the freezer did we truly need?
Or, yeah, exactly.
You know, whatever that is. So it's like you said, a lot of responsibility and continued education, but it's such a cool tool and such a great opportunity for people to get into fishing. You know, it's really hard to say that because, is the average person that fishes maybe a couple days in the summer, are they going to go out and spend money on a live scope? No. But if you can go with a guide that has a live scope and like increase that catch rate or whatever it is, or if you're kind of that, okay, I'm an intermediate angler, like I fish quite a bit and I'm just looking to that next step, like investing in one of those, I've had a lot of friends and clients that aren't allowed to fish with me because they come out fishing and they go home and they're like, I need one of those. And their wife is like, yep, you're not fishing with him anymore because
you're banned.
Every time you fish with him, you want something more. Yeah. It's like, we can't afford that whatever it is. Because honestly, when people see it, they're like, wow, it can be that big of a game changer. But the bottom line is you still have to put in the work to know where the fish are and to take the time to, you know, take the hours or whatever it is scouting to find these fish. And I preface a lot of my guide trips, or even when I'm taking people out fishing, I was like, I can't promise anything. I said, but I can almost promise that I can guarantee we'll find fish and we'll be on fish most of the day, but there's no promise that we're always going to get them to bite. You know, we're gonna have to work like some days midsummer when things aren't snapping, you're just grinding bites out. Like, we're gonna have to work for these fish today. You know, like we'll catch some fish, but we're gonna have to really grind it out and put our bait in front of a lot of fish. And people stay so engaged when they know there's fish there, like we talked about earlier. I have so many people that, like, we get done, maybe we're doing a half day trip, 4 hours, and they got into the live scope and they're seeing it. We're catching a few, even if it's a slower day, they're like, wait, that was 4 hours already?
Yeah.
Like, man, I have never spent 4 hours in a boat. And like, I'm usually like an hour and I'm out, you know?
But
we were always casting on fish. But then it's, I get pretty spoiled at times where it's like, I have a tough time throwing out a bait, other than maybe early season shallow. I have a tough time making a cast unless I know there's a fish there.
Right.
Which again is kind of one of those things where, like, man, has this gone too far that I don't even want to cast unless I see a fish?
Yeah.
But when you see how effective it can be, it's pretty hard. It's like, well, there's nothing there, so why am I casting?
Yeah.
But there is still things that you miss on the live scope. As good as live scope is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Like, there's still things that you miss. Like, there's times where I was casting right at my live scope, or I'm not even casting because I'm just waiting to see a fish, and then my buddy's hooked up with one. I was like, I didn't even see that one there. You can't catch that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a funny game when it comes to that.
Yeah, and that's like what I've always said. Like, I don't know, what percentage would you say, I guess maybe before and then after live scope, what percentage of your time would you be spending locating the fish?
So it depends on personally or if I'm scouting. So like when I'm scouting for trips, truthfully, I don't even drop a line usually. Like, I just drive around and I pop my live, and I'm just going from spot to spot, seeing where fish are to know where they are. Sometimes I'll drop a line to see if there's active fish there, but it can change so much. But like when I'm out fishing with friends, I feel like, or if I'm, you know, when I'm guiding, then I know where the fish are generally. So I'll drive right there and I'll put the live scope down. If we don't see them, we're on to someplace else.
Right.
But like for myself, if I'm just going to go out and fish and I'm going to go try to learn some new stuff, or I do a lot, sometimes driving around a lot,
right,
you know, and I'm just driving around with my live scope with my side imaging, and there's times where I'm like, oof, this is getting to be a grind at times. And then there's times where it's like, oh, the first spot that I checked has fish, and we go whack a couple, like, oh, sweet.
Right.
So I would say I definitely spent a lot more, especially side imaging. Once side imaging came out, it was a lot more. And then live scope, it just kind of continued. I spent a lot more time driving around, but then I'm fishing so much more efficiently.
Right. That's the big thing.
The time that I'm actually fishing is always around fish. And you can kind of tell if fish are active or not. And so, yeah, it's definitely a little bit more driving, but in the same respect, when you were doing that with 2D, it took so much longer.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I can go and scan a hump in 20 seconds, where it would take me like four times zigging and zagging over top of it to see it on my 2D.
Yeah. And then you spook them.
If you're going to fish like that.
Yeah.
Yep. But then if you're trolling or you're pulling Lindy rigs on weed edges, like there's times where it's not as, you know, as important or as, you know, crucial to the style of fishing. There's a couple guide trips a year where if the fish are on weed edges or whatever, and I know it's a trolling bite, I'm like, we're not even going to use it, you know? And, so it kind of depends on the style, and that's my style of fishing. I love fishing deep, like as in like, you know, deeper than like 10 feet, you know, 10 to 20, 25 feet. I love fishing over structure like that because you can see the fish, you can cast to them. It's just a super fun bite.
Right.
You know, shallow can be sometimes hard to see fish. but deeper, you know, you're seeing fish all over. So yeah, I spend a lot more time driving around, but I'm fishing much more efficiently.
Right. And that's kind of what I was getting at with lots of, like, I think about the guys who are good at tournaments or guys really good at guiding. It's, they know how to locate the fish, and that's the big thing, right? Like, I mean, most, like, obviously, you saw, like we've talked about on both these episodes, fish will turn their nose at things. Obviously, they're not always going to eat, right? But like the fact, if you're able to locate the fish, most people can end up hooking up with the fish when they're on it. And I think that's the difference between these guys that are really good guides, really good tournament anglers, is they know how to locate those fish. Like, lots of the time when I'm going to lakes, it's, I don't get to spend as much time there. And one thing I guess is important, because I'm sure there's going to be some listeners from your area with you being on here, is we don't have the maps laid out for our lakes, right? And that's a big thing. Like, there is some lakes that have them, but lots of the time it's, you're using your auto chart and making the map yourself or whatever. And so if it's a lake that you haven't been to a lot, it's like, oh man, where do I even begin, right? And there is some things you can find to try and help you out, or, you know, everyone, you know, names of certain places around the lake and you've heard that, but just because you've heard of, I don't know, Lewis Beach, it's like, well, where by Lewis Beach are you fishing? Is there a main lake hump? Is there, like, what's going on, right? So it's a lot more time spent there, whereas I guess you can probably, lots of lakes around you, look at a map and be like, I'm going to check here, and here, right? I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's a few lakes that I've auto charted because they're not accurate. They're like 10-foot contours or 5-foot contours or whatever, and they're just very general.
Right.
But for the most part, most of our lakes are, you know, especially the bigger lakes, they're 1-foot contours, so they're super dialed in. And there's still some inaccuracies in them.
Yep.
But yeah, and with, you know, the shading that you can do, the depth shading.
That's nice. Yeah.
There's stretches where it's like, okay, I know the fish are between 12 and 20 feet, so I can set that, and it's like, boom, now all of a sudden this 3,000-acre lake gets down to like a couple hundred acres because, yep, okay, these are the prime spots. Like, okay, this is the point that sticks out, or this flat, or whatever it is. You can really break down with the mapping, where you guys, you know, it takes a little more work to be able to find some of those. But then when you find some of those sweet spots, I'm sure it's like, man, like you're fishing untouched waters at times. You know,
yep,
there's been times where I've even found stuff that's not on a map, and then I auto chart it, and I was like, oh,
yeah.
Has anybody ever fished this sport? And obviously people have fished it before, but like, does anybody even know this hump? Or, you know, when you're out side imaging out, you know, there's a couple areas where I found it's like soft, soft, soft bottom, and there's this tiny little rock pile out there.
Yeah.
It doesn't even really show up on a map, you know? And it's like, oh, you know, you feel like this is going to be the sweet spot. And sometimes it is, but often than not, it's not.
Yeah.
But you just feel like, oh yeah, I found something no one else is fishing. And that's half the fun of it too.
Right. Yeah. And just to basically end that was the biggest thing I find is the difference between guys who catch a ton of fish and guys who come across fish is just being able to locate them. And that would be sick to have the maps, but then the other thing is everyone has the maps, right? So everyone will be checking those spots. So that's one thing too. But I guess, I mean, we're talking specifically Garmin LiveScope here. Obviously, other companies have their versions of it as well. So lots of this can apply to there. But as far as one thing I've really liked with the Garmin for any of their stuff is they have the auto function, which has been pretty mint, I found, for the little bit I've used it so far. But as far as settings and really dialing in your live scope, what are you doing for that with your Garmin?
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we're talking some YouTube stuff, those are a lot of my videos that have done really well. You know, those are some of my most watched videos because everyone's like wants to know the quick answer. And to be honest, there's never necessarily a quick answer because it depends on the body of water that you're fishing. You know, just like if someone's listening right now and they're like, okay, I have my live scope. If you want an in-depth, you know, check out my channel. And
for sure.
But for some of the general stuff, one of the things that was super helpful to me, especially right away, is turning up my color gain, not necessarily my gain, but I turn up my color gain pretty much all the way. And again, all of this is preference stuff. When it comes to settings, so much of it is preference, but I like as much information as I can. So if I'm seeing, when you up your color gain like that, it just makes everything a little stand out a little bit more. So you might see a perch, but it might show up and initially look like a bigger fish. But once you get used to it, you can start to differentiate where some of these are. So you're starting to see some more information that you wouldn't see where if you had that color gain down. You know, and then from there I play, you know, with my gain and with some of those other settings. But that was one of the, if there's like one little tip that I would say, that color gain, like upping that a lot, because then you can dial in some of the other things from there. But that was a huge help for me. And then, you know, depending on the lake, the clearer the body of water, you're not having as much sediment. You're
yeah, for sure. That.
Sometimes you can up your gain a little bit because you're seeing clearer, depending on shallower, you know, it's muddier, you have more sediment. So if you up that gain, you're getting more information and it clouds it. And yeah. So, you know, depending on your preferences, some people like as crisp of an image, like I only want to see fish. I don't want anything in the background.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I like to up it a little bit. You know, if I'm fishing personally, sometimes I'll up it a little bit. So it gets kind of some cloudy features in it, but you're getting a little bit more information because I want to see everything that I possibly can.
Yeah. And you know what you're looking at, right? When it comes to that, whereas your guests might not, if it's so much going on the screen, right?
Exactly. And like, but for when I'm filming YouTube videos, like I want as crisp of an image,
yeah,
you know, because I want people to see like what I'm seeing, be able to differentiate instead of seeing a bunch of stuff on the screen, be able to see, okay, there's my bait, there's the fish,
yeah,
you know, or like some of the ice fishing videos that I've done, especially when I'm fishing shallow, you're seeing these pike crews and you're seeing all their fins and it's super cool, you know?
Yeah.
But that was one of the big things is kind of up in that color gain specifically, to then kind of monkeying around from there, depending on what you see fit and what the body of water is.
Right, for sure. And that's that was one thing I was interested in because it is impressive. I don't know if the other units have, like other companies have the auto function. I've just like, this is only my second weekend using mine open water and I've just been running it on that because I'm still obviously new to it. So if you are new to it, the auto function has been great for me, at least autoing the distance that you're out, the depth, all that stuff. It's just so much easier and you can focus on actually learning how to read it and stuff like that rather than worrying about the settings. But yeah, that's something I'll be checking out tomorrow for sure. Just with that, yeah, I think.
Pretty easy to plug and play. Like you said, which is kind of crazy to think of like how much technology is in it and
yeah,
what information is providing and to be able to just like, okay, you can plug and play, but you can really get things dialed in. You know, once you get there and you can really start differentiating, you know, some of the things that, you know, I've learned from the live scope is, you know, you can start to really ID fish.
Oh,
you know,
for
so
sure.
Like when I'm out scouting, you know, I'm seeing, you know, if there's a lake that has walleyes and smallies, for example, one of the things that I really picked up on is, okay, now I'm starting to see some of the bigger fish. They're hanging out in like maybe 1 to 3 where you see some big schools. Those are awesome to see on the live scope, but a lot of times those are maybe your more eater fish, your teeners,
yeah,
some of that kind of thing. So you can start to differentiate. And then when you're looking at, okay, bass, they look more like a circle. Smallies, largies, they look more just kind of like a blob, like a circle, where your walleyes, they are a little skinnier, you know, and it makes sense obviously because of their shape.
Yeah.
But you can really kind of start to differentiate and you can even start to get an idea of some of their size based on what they're hanging out and just how they're relating to structure. One of the things that I thought was really cool, I started having some waypoints. This is before I had live scope. You know, I had some waypoints on some of these humps or whatever it was. And oh, this is where I always catch fish. And so then I go to live scope and pan around and I'm seeing these fish right on that spot. And then I fish them. And sometimes they spook. If I get too close or I catch a fish and they kind of scatter.
Yeah.
And they oftentimes you can watch them on the live scope. They'll kind of circle back around and almost come back to the same spot because there's something holding them. You know, so you get to see some of those patterns and how they relate to some of the structure and then some of the groupings that they are. Another thing that was a huge learning curve for me is like, you know, you think walleyes and you're thinking, all right, you know, they're getting close to the bottom and you know, that's where they hang out and you gotta just bounce your jig on bottom. And man, walleyes are off bottom so much more. I would say a lot of the big groups, especially when I'm fishing, you know, for maybe eaters, or when I'm seeing big groups of fish, some are on bottom, but there's a lot that are, it's like a big ball.
Yeah.
Honestly, what you see on the live scope, like a big ball and they're like 10 feet above water. Let's say we're fishing 20 feet of water, they can be halfway up the water column if they're in a big enough group. And yeah, so I think it's just really opened my eyes to a lot of different things, you know, one of them being the fact that, you know, the size, how they hang out, what fish they're hanging out with depends on how big they are, but also just how much they move. When you get in certain moves of these fish, man, you can hardly keep up with them.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like they're moving around at times, you know, where we were out just this last weekend and we were able to find them on the side imaging. And they moved a little bit, but man, they stayed put. But sometimes it's like you cannot keep track of these things. And you think, okay, I have a waypoint there, so there's always going to be fish there. Whatever, as you start fishing them, you marked it on your 2D. This is one of the biggest things. Like I mark it on my 2D or my side imaging. By the time I get my live scope in the water, sometimes they're gone.
Yeah.
Or sometimes they've moved off. You know, whether it's the boat spooking them or whether they're just kind of cruising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're cruising off these edges of these structures. So that was another huge learning curve for me is like, man, these fish move a lot. You catch one fish out, sometimes the whole group will get spooked a little bit and they'll move 40 feet that way. So now we have to recast and, you know, put our bait in front of the fish there. So it's a huge learning tool. You just pick up so much more information
yeah,
than any other piece of electronics that I've ever used. And they all, again, have their own piece of the puzzle that they can be used for. But yeah, this live imaging is a game changer for sure. People say that a lot about a lot of things in the fishing industry. Yeah. Oh, this is a game changer. You know, it's a good marketing thing, but truly,
this I think is.
It's been going to show. Yeah, LiveScope is 100% a game changer.
Yeah, well, and a story for you with you're talking about suspended walleye. Me and my girlfriend, we went out. We were going for burbot, but we were sitting in 28 feet of water at the lake we were at, and I just had the LiveScope in its down mode, and I have the Otter Monster Lodge is what we were in, and I'm on the far right side. She's on the far left side, and we're just getting set up, bringing the heater and everything. I look at the screen and there's a mark. We're in 28 feet of water and there's a mark 5 feet below the ice. And I just tell her, rip it up. And she rips up. The second it gets by his face, hooks into it. It's like a 30-second fight. It was a 25-inch walleye. And I'm like, I don't fish the lake a ton. I'd never even caught a walleye out there. And I'm like, we catch this one suspended 5 feet below the ice. And I was like, this makes no sense to me at all. But I was like, that fish definitely would not have been caught if I didn't have LiveScope.
Oh yeah, 100%. That happens so much with clients. Some of the biggest walleyes that we've caught. So like, you know, we got out on a guide trip one day and okay, there's a school of fish that's about 40, 50 feet that way. Like we're going to cast. They were just getting ready to cast. And I see this mark cruising through. It's literally 7 feet underneath the boat. And we're in a crystal clear body of water. You can see like 25 feet and it's crazy. So there's this fish cruising 7 feet. We almost, if it wasn't a little bit windy, we could have looked down and seen it.
Yeah.
And I just said, I looked at this guy and I was like, drop your bait down 7 feet. It's like, what? I was like, just drop it down really quick. Like we only have this. He drops it down. We watch his bait go down on the LiveScope, gets it right in front of his face, grabs it, thump, 27 inch walleye.
Yeah.
And he just looks at me. He's like, that didn't just happen. I was like, yeah. He's like, this is crazy. I was like, yeah, it was crazy. Cause you see all the fish there, but that happens a lot, especially, I mean, it happens open or ice fishing too, but it happens a lot open water, you know, especially some of these bigger fish, they cruise suspended so much more than we sometimes think, you know, and seeing these fish and being able to cast to them. I've kind of gotten to have, especially when I'm fishing myself, I don't obviously do it with clients or have them cast at kind of these stray fish, but I love, if I see like a random mark, I love just casting it. I'm like, I want to see where it is. See if they bite. And honestly, there's so many times where these random marks, it's just they're one by themselves. They bite and they're bigger fish.
Yeah.
You know, we see that all the time. These fish just cruise and they're cruising 2 feet underneath the water. They're cruising towards bottom, but a lot of those singles like that, and a lot of times they're active, you know, they're a lot more active than what I thought. I thought I would have to like pitch at them a lot or like one out of every 20 fish, but it's pretty often that those fish will bite.
Right.
And, one more quick story that I thought this was really something that I'm kind of learning more about specifically with the LiveScope, and it's super cool. So I was out with, I'm a part of Kinship, which is like a mentoring program. It's like Big Brother, Big Sister.
Okay.
So I have a mentee. And he loves fishing, you know, it's just perfect match, you know, so we're out fishing together and we're fishing off this weed edge and we're seeing some walleyes cruising. So I'm kind of casting to them and the weed edge was in about 18 feet. So I'm panning around with the LiveScope and I look up and I'm like probably like 10 feet, there's like an opening in the weeds. You see weeds, opening. And I just see this big mark and I was like, okay, it could be anything. And then I see two of them and I see them start swimming around. And so I was like, hey, let's scoot up a little closer. So we scoot up a little closer and those things are still sitting there. And so I see two big marks. So I pitch out a drop shot and a crawler and immediately this thing just, we're in like, I don't know what it was, like 9 feet of water at the time. Mm-hmm. You're seeing this open spot in the weeds and sure enough, we hook into it. Aiden's reeling it in. I net it for him, 29 3/4 inch walleye.
Wow.
And I was like, so he saw it from like 70 feet away.
Yeah.
Saw it from 70 feet away. We went up in the weeds. So then I'm like, is this a pattern that I could duplicate? So then later in that day, I was just fishing by myself. I dropped him off. And so I'm like, I'm just going to cruise these shallow weeds and only drop when I think I see a fish mixed in these weeds. And like, so this isn't something I'm going to do guiding because nobody's going to have patience to do that. You know, like they're just sitting there. But for me, I'm so interested in seeing this. And I caught multiple fish over 25 inches doing that. And I was just driving around and sometimes right underneath the boat, like I wouldn't spook them, but it's in the weeds, you know, I think they feel a little more comfortable.
Right.
And so I would just drive around. Sometimes I'd spook or get on top a little too much, but I just drop straight down, 25 inch walleye. Okay, I'm going to keep moving. You know, and then there's times where I drive for half an hour, I wouldn't see a fish. So it's like, okay, this is a grind.
Yeah.
And then you see that one big fish and you drop on it and you're like, I just caught a 26 inch walleye. Like, this was awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole half hour was. So it's kind of something that I'm learning more about. And that's one of the things about LiveScope is like, you're always learning.
You
learn so much. Like, I never would have thought that I could see those fish from that far away and get relatively close to them, pitch to them, and have them bite. So that's one thing I'm really looking forward to trying out more, is kind of moving around those weeds, especially a little bit more sparse weeds, and being able to try to pick out some of the bigger fish. Because there's a lot of big walleyes that hang out in those weeds all summer long. Because, yeah, that was like end of July or something, like your dog days of summer kind of thing.
Yeah. And
it was a pretty cool something that I'm like, ooh, I want to try that more, you know? And it's, but when I'm guiding all the time, I don't have a lot of time to experiment with that kind of stuff. So
right. No, for sure.
It's just another little live scope tidbit that, like, I feel like every so often you stumble across something like, oh, that could be a sneaky bite, you know? And even similar when John Hoyer was on and he was talking about, you know, ripping those big swim baits through the weeds.
Like he was.
You know, it's something similar to that, not the same technique, but like just finding those big fish in those weeds and utilizing the live scope to get those things to bite is pretty darn cool.
Oh, for sure. And I guess we've already, for the second episode, have another 45 minutes here. So I guess let's hit on, so I don't want to keep it too much later, but let's hit on some disadvantages. This has basically been all advantages of walleye or of live scope, but let's do some disadvantages. And then we like to end our episodes with some quick fire questions. So I have a couple there, but what's, if any, I guess, whether it's fishing related or just industry related, whatever, what would you consider any disadvantages to be of the live scope?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, a lot of times is people mistreating it in the fact of like guys getting super good at it and then abusing fisheries. I mean, that's probably the most prevalent and the most obvious disadvantage is like people abusing the technology. But honestly, nature's pretty good at defending itself. Like, unless you're snagging them, you know, there's times where these fish might continue to, you know, learn from this as they see more baits and as they, you know, they might continue to get harder and harder to get to bite. But I would say that's one big disadvantage is, you know, the pressure that it can provide on fish. And I know a lot of those musky guys that's a hot topic right now.
Yep.
And, you know, are they targeting fish too deep? Are they just sitting on one fish and casting at it for, you know, 3 hours because they see it's like a 50 plus inch fish? And,
yeah, it's just sitting there.
We like to have those conversations, me and a few of the guides in the area. We love just like kind of not necessarily debate, but just like kind of talk both sides of it. Cause I mean, we love talking fishing and it's one of the hot topics right now. So that is one of them. And the other thing is just like becoming so dependent on it. Like sometimes I feel like I don't remember how to fish without it.
Right.
You know, it's become such a part of my fishing. It's like, man. And then we get into some of these shallow bites and I'm like, okay, yep, we can still do this. Like, this is still fun to, you're lining up that tree with that flagpole and, you know, that guy's house. And that's the spot, you know, like the old days, or, you know, you're reading, you know, whether it's currents or weather or whatever, you're trying to read some of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I think almost becoming too dependent on it at times, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but that's a little bit of a disadvantage. And, you know, we're seeing screens all the time. And so then, you know, the one place you can get out in nature and
here's another 9-inch, 12-inch screen.
You know? So I do struggle with that a little bit. And I know we talked about that before too, is like, man, especially with these younger generations, you know, I see it in school all the time. Like these kids are so dependent on their phones or tablets or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you think the last place that we should be staring at screens is out in the beauty of God's creation, you know, like, beautiful sunrise, whatever it is. And yep, now I'm going to fire up my live scope here and my hummingbirds and like everything's just shining in my face. So like, I feel like that is a little bit of a negative, is like taking away from some of the experience in that respect. But in another respect, it adds to the experience in such a different way.
Yeah.
So that those are a few of the main negatives that I see. And obviously like cost, it's not cheap.
Yeah, that's like a good one there. Yeah.
As far as like being accessible, like, it takes a good chunk of change, you know? And if I wasn't able to like make money fishing and doing what I do and whatnot, like
it's hard to justify it, right?
That's a big bill to foot, you know? And, it's, so that is a big thing. And I think that's hard too. One thing I would really struggle to see is if, you know, prices are going to come down eventually, just like it always does with electronics when the next thing comes out. But you just hate to see people not get into fishing because it becomes such a rich person's game.
Yeah.
You know, in some respects of like, okay, well, I can't get into fishing because I can't drop $3,000-$4,000 on a live scope. And that's what it takes to catch fish. And, you know, I don't think we're obviously at that point, but, you know, that's something to be mindful of moving forward. And, you know, even doing some of the YouTube stuff of like promoting it. I love like sharing my adventures educating people and like getting people excited about fishing. Like, whoa, I could do that too, but I don't want someone to watch my video. You know, my students have watched my videos and they say that all the time. And I don't want someone like wherever, hey, I'm just going to try to get into fishing. And they see this and they're like, well, I'm not going to get into fishing now because he has thousands of dollars in electronics and this and that. So there are some of those negatives too, but it's a pretty cool opportunity to learn. And I think that just shortens up that learning curve for people a ton.
Well,
is being able to see how these fish react and where they are and all of that.
Yeah. And the whole premise of the weekend warrior, right? You only have so much time and everyone's busy, right? So when my biggest thing is the efficiency, right? When I'm out on the water, I get out a lot, but not as much as I'd like to. Right. And so it's like, when I'm out there, I want to know that I'm not just wasting time washing hooks, right? Like that's a big thing, right? So I think that's one of the advantages. And like you said, kind of worrying about, can I fish without it? Like, have I forgotten how to fish without it? Like I was on Monday, I was using it and I'm pitching out my jigs and my slip bobbers to these fish that I'm seeing 40 feet away. I caught 3 walleye at the one spot doing this. Well, my buddy sat at the back of the boat, sitting in his chair, jigging in 8 feet of water, and he caught 7. And I was like, okay, like what? Like I'm out here looking at this, casting these guys and whatever. And he's just sitting there and he's just using the 2D. He's just watching. Oh, there's Mark. And sure enough, it come and bite. So it's like, well, you can kind of get lost in it too, obviously. But I think, right, that efficiency and not wasting time, especially gas isn't cheap. That's one thing too, right? Like just there's so many things that go into it now, and it is an expensive enough thing to get into. So when you do look at that, and I guess that's one thing to keep in mind, if someone has listened to this and kind of were like, oh, I want to go buy it. It's not just like traditional sonar where you buy it and you put it on your boat, right? Like you're looking at some other things we were talking beforehand, like the go and get all the other accessories that you kind of need for it for your boat or whatever, and some of the, say, the poles might not be the greatest that comes with it just from the box, but then you go and look at poles and it's like, oh man, there's some more money going into it too, right? So there is a lot more to it. So like you said, you don't want to be scared away by the money, because lots of kids watch these things and it's like they see, say, they see John Hoyer out there fishing in the tournament. It's like, I need a boat like that. It's like, no, you don't, but that's what lots of people see, right? That's what they're seeing online and stuff. And it's like, this is what you need to go fishing. And I've been out on the water and just watched myself get absolutely schooled by guys in a 12-foot tinner with a 10 horse, right? Like it's, you don't need all that stuff. It's nice to have, and it's a luxury. And when you're, like you said, you're doing it for your job too, right? That's yep. another big part of it, yeah, too. If you just want to look at it as a write-off.
So that's easier.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Even if you can't find fish with it, at least it's a write-off. So that's one thing for it.
That's one thing I've noticed is I'm really good at finding write-offs for my business, because I buy a lot of fishing stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not usually hard.
No, that's the nice thing with having a fishing related job. It's like, I was going to probably buy this stuff anyways, but hey, it's for my job now. So no, that's totally worth it.
That's one of the things I love about doing some of the YouTube stuff. Now all the trips that I have and being able to just film on those trips, and you know, then that's income coming in from YouTube, and that's a legitimate business write-off.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like, how sweet is that? Like I don't know. I've always just thought that was so cool. Like, man, I never thought, you know, that this would be something you could be doing even on the small scale that I'm doing it. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. So now we're at 50, pretty well 55 minutes here. So let's get into some rapid fire here. These are different every time. Sometimes I don't even have them written down like today. So we kind of just go with whatever, but it doesn't have to be one word answers or anything. You can just, whatever comes to your mind, but just quick questions that you don't know what the question is going to be is the biggest thing at the start here. So,
all right, I'm ready.
So I guess this will be for maybe any of your students listening or any of your clients that might come out with you, but what's the best snack or food they can bring you as a client or student?
Beef jerky,
venison
jerky, any kind of jerky. Oh, you get a beef stick in my hand and I'm a happy man. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
I just got some deer processed couple months ago, and I'm like, I swear we're almost 3/4 done with it, because I'm like, oh, this is dangerous to have. And I've never met anyone that I've been in the boat with that I bring out some beef sticks or something that's going to turn it down.
Yeah.
So 100%. Some sort of beef stick, beef jerky, Oh, that's the good stuff right there.
Well, you need to get those snacks going or the food going too. Cause like we talked about, I don't know if it's in the first part or second part, you get lazy fishing, right? If things are going well, then you don't put food in your body or whatever water drinks into your body, you can really get lazy. It's like, you basically just waste the day away cause you're just like starving and you're not catching fish. It's like, man, that could be tough. So the snacks are important.
I'm a snack guy. It's there's times where I'm like, I'm so into fishing where I am fishing and I don't even think about eating.
Yeah.
But then there's times where I'm like, I'm a sweets guy. So I have like three different kinds of sweets in the cooler. Like we're just snacking on them all day. And that's why I like, that's a big reason why I bought LiveScope, is I have to be around fish. Otherwise I'm going to eat so much food.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's me ice fishing. It's like, I'll have breakfast and then it's like, I get home at like 11. It's like, I haven't eaten anything all day, and you definitely feel cooked when you get home, but it's like, man, you just, you just don't do it.
Guide trips, you know, you're so into it and you're like going. And then you get to the end of the day and I was like, okay, I haven't drank any water.
Yeah.
I've been out in 90 degrees for 8 hours. And yeah. I was like, yeah, that's probably not good.
Yeah, exactly. So, next one up here, dream trip for yourself for fishing.
Ooh. So I'll do one that I'm actually doing this March. My dad and I are going to the Columbia River.
Oh, nice.
To catch some giant pre-spawn walleyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to be fun because, I mean, there's no better place in the country to go catch a teener walleye than over there right now. And
is that out west?
So that's one that I'm doing. Yeah. So it's like border of Washington and Oregon there.
Okay.
And yeah, there's some just unreal walleyes, you know, like 16, 17, 18 pounders coming out of there. It's
right.
Stuff that I'm like, I can't even imagine
and
catching one of those.
Am I totally out to lunch? Are they not invasive in there or parts of it?
They are like, well, I don't know a whole lot about that side of things, but I do know that a lot of guys aren't super thrilled. Like, I don't know if they're necessarily invasive. They might be. I don't know for sure on that, but I know that a lot of it's like, you know, the steelhead or the salmon or some of that. So there's kind of like, it's a trash fish over there at times, you know,
even though they're absolute monsters.
We're traveling like halfway across the country to go target these things. But yeah, that was a cool opportunity that we got through. It was called Angling for Life. I donate a trip to there usually every year, and it's just to raise money for International Justice Mission or Feed My Starving Children. A guy that fishes out there put one on, and I'm like, yeah, dad, let's do this. Like, this is something that I've always wanted to do. But otherwise, honestly, I would love to do just kind of like a roundabout ice fishing trip up through like, Clearwater, Baker's Narrows, Wekusko, like that whole area,
right,
and just spend like 2 weeks and fish like all those lakes. When we were up in Wekusko Falls up there, oh my gosh, the fishing was just so amazing. So I've always wanted to get back up there. So that would definitely be kind of a dream trip for me, would be kind of hitting those up ice fishing.
For sure. That was sound like a good time. I guess, I don't know if you guys have this. I don't know if I should call it a problem. Might get hate for that. But down in the States, what is your opinion on walleye versus pickerel? Do you guys have that issue?
No. So I went to college in Mayville State. It's a small school in North Dakota. And so I played baseball there, and a lot of my teammates were Canadians.
Okay.
And so it's always been walleye. I didn't know what people were talking when they were talking pickerel.
Right.
You know, like chain pickerel, or like, what are you talking about here?
Yeah.
And now these guys come over, and you know, I'm always bringing back fish. They're like, oh, is this pickerel? I was like, no, this is walleye. Yeah, pickerel. No, this is walleye. So I'm a big walleye proponent, and I think that's kind of a Canadian thing, is the pickerel.
Yeah.
So we don't hear a lot of it around
here. Okay. I wasn't sure. So you're on, in my opinion, the right side of it, I guess, as far as the walleye. I think it's definitely, when we talk about generational things or things changing, I think that's more of a generational thing, especially because they aren't pickerel. There is actual pickerel as far as the chain pickerel. But that's what we always like to ask, because there is some pretty heated opinions on that as well. Especially as you get, I've noticed not as much in the south here, but when you get up into more of the northern lakes and stuff like that, I've noticed that in Manitoba and Saskatchewan and stuff, it's pickerel that people are catching.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
All the Canadian boys that I played baseball with in college were pickerel.
Okay.
100%.
Yeah.
It was like a fine line. And it wasn't like we were even that far away, because we weren't too far from the border there. So as we're talking within hours of each other, and it was like such a fine line of like, if you're on that side of the border, you're calling it pickerel.
Yeah.
If you're in the States, you're calling it walleye.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess for the last one, to wrap this all up here, what if you had one technique slash lure to use for the rest of your life for, we'll say for walleye, because that's kind of been the theme. We didn't even get to talk about burbot, so I'll have to have you on again. But as far as for walleye, one technique slash lure, what are you going with?
I would say my favorite bite that I like to feel, to set the hook, to catch, is a jigging minnow. Mm-hmm. Like I just love it. But otherwise, like if I had to go catch a fish and I had one bait to use, and I needed to catch one walleye, I would go like jigging wrap.
Oh, like, yeah.
Some sort of reaction bait. That would be my go-to. I have more confidence. If there's one fish sitting down there on the live scope and I see it and I was like, all right, you get one cast, what are you throwing? I'm throwing a jigging wrap 100%.
Interesting. That's cool. We've asked that one a couple of times, and there always seems to be, actually, no, Emily said, I think she said jigging wrap was her favorite all-round species lure kind of thing. But yeah, no, that's interesting. It's always cool to see what, especially depending where people are, what their go-to would be for that, because you're stuck with that one lure. So I mean, makes sense though.
Yeah, and that's something that people don't have a lot of confidence in. I try to teach clients it every once in a while if I see that they can work rods and they know how to fish pretty well. But man, it's people have a tough time getting confidence in that reaction style bait, you know. And I had one guy that I was like, here, try this, there's walleyes right underneath it, and he two rips and just wham, got smoked by a walleye. And one of the things I told him was like, you're gonna have to like keep tension on and keep reeling, like it's gonna catch you by surprise.
Yeah.
So he gets this thing on and all his buddies are like, reel, go, and he just like froze.
Yeah.
And it gets off, you know, because he didn't reel. And so he hands the rod back to me. He's like, nope, I can't do this. He's like, this is too stressful.
Yeah, that is the thing I found a lot too. Like, I don't know if it's specifics on the type of rod and action and everything you're using, but it's so cool to get pounded like that. And then it's such a heartbreak when they pop off, which seems to happen, at least to me. Maybe I just suck at it, but they seem to pop off a lot when it comes to those style of baits, I found.
100%. No, they do a lot. And, you know, using like mono can help because it has a little bit of stretch.
Right.
But then you don't feel some of the bite. So there's always give and take, but that can be talked about at another time.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess we were very grateful that you came on. So plug away. Where can people find you? Everything like that.
Yeah, you bet. You know, if you're looking for like some of the stuff that we talked about specifically with LiveScope, or, you know, how to read some of those electronics, I have a lot of informational videos on YouTube. And that's just if you search TJ's Guide Service, put out a ton of LiveScope stuff and all of that. Otherwise, social media, Instagram is probably the one that I'm on the most. And that's just TJ's Guide Service as well. Facebook, I have a Facebook page too for my business, TJ's Guide Service. That's pretty much where it's at. Otherwise, if you're interested in like booking a trip, TJ'sGuideService.com. is the website. All the information's on there. If you're come to the Minnesota area and want to get out, it'd be fun to get you out. So that's kind of some of my socials, some of the areas that they can contact me.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on very much. Two-part episode here, so took quite a bit of your time, but we appreciate that for sure.
Hey, I could talk fishing all day.
Sounds good. We'll definitely have you on again then. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode there. It's definitely fun getting to sit down with TJ for pretty long. Obviously, we got these two episodes out of one sit down. And then I think we talked for about 45 minutes before recording and probably another 45 minutes to an hour after that. Just a great guy to talk to. Tons of information there. It's kind of cool. I know this kind of goes back into part one, episode 54 there, but it's kind of cool seeing how different lakes are throughout the Canada and the northern states there, as far as how walleye fishing goes, dependent on the conditions of the lake and stuff like that. Like, even he just explained how different it was for him going from where he'd grown up to where he is now, and the tactics and stuff like that. So I hope you guys enjoyed those two episodes. This one was definitely, I learned quite a bit from this one with the live scope topic. So definitely some stuff I'll be using as I get back out on the water with the live scope once I get home from the territories here. So yeah, hope you guys enjoyed that. Want to end it off here with a quick shout out to our presenting sponsor again, 13 Fishing. Check out the show notes below. Use our code WeekendWarriors. Save yourself 15% off the entire website. That's all their brands. You got Rapala, Strike Master, 13 Fishing, so many more. So definitely check them out. Get that stuff you need. They ship really quick. Usually it comes within the week. So that's another great part about it. But yeah, thank you very much for tuning in. This will probably be the last episode until I get home from the territories. So once I get back, we'll be ramping things back up again, and look forward to bringing you guys some more awesome episodes. So stay tuned for those and have yourself a good rest of your spring.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.